Great. So first of all, so we'll double check your sound. Just tell me your name while Cameron spelled for me.
Sure. My name is Christopher Bolin. C-H-R-I-S-T-O-P-H-E-R. Bolin. B as in boy. O-L-L-Y-N.
Okay. And what is your title? Journalist, author, investigator? What would you like us to identify you as?
I'm a writer.
Okay.
I'm a writer. I have been a journalist, but currently I'm a writer.
How did the collapse of the towers become your sort of specialty, your niche?
My niche? We happened to be in New York on 9/11. We were passing through, coming down from Vermont, going back to my office in Washington. And when it happened, I called the office in Washington. I said, kamikazes are attacking the World Trade Center. And the newspaper in Washington didn't believe me. They thought I was joking. And then we couldn't go to Washington after what happened at the Pentagon. So we were forced to drive on the small roads through Pennsylvania back to Chicago.
And that's when the whole sort of thirst for understanding or knowledge began in terms of how the collapse happened.
Yes, and I have a background in studying these kinds of things. I was involved in the Estonian catastrophe in Europe, a shipwreck that killed 1,000 people, nearly 1,000 people in 1994. So I've looked at these kinds of mass disasters.
Okay. I want to stop for one second. Yeah. Keep it rolling. Don't stop the tape. I'm sorry, there's one piece of hair that is moving around.
It mostly faces this way, so you don't see it that much.
Oh, no, it's up here.
Can I
fix it? Can I fix it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's.
It just, you know what it is? It looks like a leaf.
He was born in the year of a rooster, so.
He's got
cowlicks. Yeah, I have the same problems.
Yeah, most of the time he's sort of turning this way looking at
her. Now, which way should I look? Should I look at her? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Look at her.
Absolutely.
Look at
that.
It's nice to look at her.
That's better. Thank you. Okay.
And be light.
If you want a tight shot,
light.
If you want me to
engage,
move at all.
Yeah.
Well, that's all right.
Okay.
Okay.
Speed. Then okay. Stop.
Okay. Great. So, all right. So let's talk. When you explain what you believe 9/11 is, how do you qualify 9/11?
I call 9/11 an unsolved crime. An unsolved crime of monstrous proportions.
Why there has been so much written about 9/11, there have been reports, there has been a commission that came out with a number of conclusions as to what happened. Why do you believe there are still questions?
Because the reports don't address a lot of the key issues. For example, the government reports don't address the collapse of Building 7. The 47-story building that fell at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 5:20 in the afternoon. And we're still waiting for the final report from NIST about that building.
All right.
Andy Strickland, please dial the operator. Andy Strickland, please dial the operator.
I may hear a little noise. I may hear, when this goes on, we do need to pause.
Sure,
okay?
Sure.
Or I'll re-ask the question. If you hear little noises out there, I'm very aware of what you're saying, and so
okay.
If I need to stop you, I will stop you.
Okay.
The only thing that's troublesome is that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So how you have looked at the official version of events, and what do you believe is incorrect about that version?
The official version fails to explain properly the collapses of the three towers. Towers 1 and 2, and Building 7. They have yet to explain what happened to Building 7, and their explanations for Buildings 1 and 2 are simply not adequate.
When we talk about, let me go back. Why do you think it's not adequate? They think that's the answer. Why do you think it's inadequate? What information do you have that you just feel is not conclusive?
There's a great deal of evidence that contradicts the official version. But most recently, let's look at the large amount of molten metal that poured off of the South Tower before it collapsed. From the east corner of Building 2, South Tower, we saw many tons of molten metal pouring off of the 81st floor. And the NIST report, for example, the final report that came out in 2005, fails to explain what this metal is or where it came from. And that's very important because this is the floor that Flight 175 went through. And the NIST report doesn't tell us what was on floors 81, 82, or 79. These are crucial floors.
Why do you think that would hold the key in terms of an explanation that this was a conspiracy?
Most importantly, one has to understand that buildings 1 and 2, also building 7, were held up by core columns. And the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center, the weight of these buildings were held up by the 47 core columns. And the fundamental mystery since 9/11 is what caused those core columns to fail. If those core columns didn't fail, the buildings wouldn't come down. And to this day, we don't have an explanation what caused them to fall.
And you feel that is not addressed in the NIST report. You're unhappy with the answer that they give.
No,
it's simply the way the building was designed, the fuel, the force of the impact. And they say, yes, it absolutely looks like a controlled demolition, but there's no evidence to suggest. The NIST report says, while it looks like a controlled demolition, there's no evidence to suggest that some sort of explosives contributed to that demolition itself.
Well, the NIST report doesn't deal with this very well at all because, for example, the molten metal that's seen pouring off of the 81st floor, many tons of it, this is explained in the NIST report as presumed to be aluminum. It's important because Professor Jones at BYU has looked at this question and said that it's not possible that this is aluminum because molten aluminum would look silver gray in daylight conditions. So this must be molten iron or another metal. And it's an extremely hot temperature. And so you have to explain where this molten metal came from.
All right. When we get down to the computer, I want you to show me those pictures that you're now going through. So let's look at it for that. I want to go to the... Okay, so if we... To follow through on your belief that this was a conspiracy, the conspiracy theorists sort of are broken up into two camps. Those who believe the government either let it happen or somehow caused it to happen. Where do you fall?
I wish I knew who did it. I don't know the players involved. So I can't speculate if the government let it happen or made it happen. But I can say that our government and our Department of Justice and the President and the Vice President did not give it the blue ribbon investigation it needed from the beginning. Both President Bush and Vice President Cheney said in 2001 that they did not want to give full attention to the collapse and the destruction of the World Trade Center because it would take away resources from the war in Afghanistan. I find that absolutely inexcusable.
Who had the most to gain from this attack on the United States?
If you look at the attack of 9/11 historically, it has all the hallmarks of what we call the new Pearl Harbor. And virtually every foreign war the United States has gotten into was precipitated by some calamitous disaster like Pearl Harbor. 9/11 is in my opinion, the modern day Pearl Harbor. And it was effective and it was used to sway public opinion to usher in the war on terror.
All right. So, given that it was such a cataclysmic event, sort of, again, who had the resources to pull it off?
It certainly required the resources of state-sponsored intelligence agencies. It was too big, involving airplanes, involving the pre-placement of explosives in the towers, which I think is there's evidence of, and the way that the story was spun, and the way that the non-investigation was conducted, certainly indicates that state players are involved.
Okay. Just so I'm clear on this, when you say pre-placement of explosives, where?
Well, I think the evidence is pretty clear that there were explosive charges.
Say that again. I saw you on fire. Mm-hmm. I'm in shock. When you talk about pre-placement of explosives, where?
Specifically, I think the 81st floor of the South Tower, for example, As I said, the NIST report doesn't tell us what's on that floor, but somebody has come forward to me who worked at the Japanese bank and told me that floor was full of server-sized UPS batteries that were never plugged in. And we have to have an explanation of what produced the molten metal, the tons of molten metal. The NIST report gives us a blank. It doesn't tell us anything.
Have you approached Deutsche Bank to ask why those batteries were there on that day?
Yes, I contacted, it's now the Mizuho Bank. There was a merger of the three banks. Contacted them. I've contacted the company that was involved in the contracting of that floor. I contacted Leslie Robertson, who did the structural reinforcement of that floor in 1999. I've contacted all the players.
And what have they told you? What explanation have they given you?
Basically, Leslie Robertson said that I have to talk to the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. But I know that it's a matter of record in the NIST report that the A first floor was reinforced in 1999 in order to hold a very heavy load of UPS batteries. And my question is, why does the NIST report not tell us? Because this is the floor that the fuselage of Flight 175 went through. And this is the floor that we have these tremendous fires and where we see molten metal pouring off 10 minutes before the tower fell. So what was on the 81st and 82nd floor of the World Trade Center seems to be crucial to understanding the collapse of the tower.
Okay. And do you think then that suggests that the pilots of those planes knew exactly to hit the 81st floor? That seems a little bit impossible.
Yeah, well, you're raising a very important question. I believe those planes were drones and that they were... they acted like precision-guided missiles. I'm not at all sure that anybody was on those planes that hit the South Tower and the North Tower. And what's important to understand is that both planes struck directly into computer rooms, secure computer rooms. The 81st floor of the South Tower was a secure computer room belonging to Fuji Bank. And in the North Tower, the 95th floor was a secure computer room belonging to Marsh & McLennan. And so what I think is that both planes were remotely controlled, and at the last minute they were pulled into those towers by precision-guided systems.
So what happened to the people on those planes?
I have reason to believe that the actual planes with passengers landed elsewhere. And in the case of 175 and Flight 11, the evidence suggests that they landed at Stewart Airport, International Airport, because both planes converged over Stewart Airport prior to entering the metro New York area. And if we go by the Operation Northwood scenario, the passenger planes landed and military-style drones carried on the attack.
Do imaging systems, the FAA models, the logs, the sort of tracking of the flight plans, is there any evidence that bears that out?
Yes, there is. There's the air traffic controller noticed that both flights 175 and 11 converged seemingly into one blip on the computer screen over Stewart Air Force Base, former Stewart Air Force Base, which is today a privately owned airport in New York. And furthermore, Flight 93 was reported by Associated Press to have landed at Cleveland Hopkins Airport. So there is evidence to suggest that indeed the passenger planes involved that day landed at airports. And there's also evidence to indicate that Flight 175 and Flight 11, the planes that supposedly did hit towers, were not those planes.
And do you have any sense where the people might be?
No, I wish I did.
All right. I want to get back to... who did this? Who had the motives? You've written numerous articles. They have appeared on the website whose name I just completely blocked it. I'm sorry. I'm the witness. I apologize. You have written numerous articles that have appeared on the website I Am the Witness that say the Zionists, the Jews, were somehow responsible, that they were behind this. Based on what do you make that conclusion?
I am, I approach 9/11 as an unsolved crime. So I look at the evidence and draw my conclusions from the evidence. And there are indications, as there were indications early on, of Israeli involvement. Not Jewish involvement, Israeli involvement. And this was, I wrote about this in the very beginning when five young men were arrested in New Jersey, and they had been seen photographing the collapse or the attacks on the World Trade Center and ostensibly celebrating this attack. Paolo Lima from the Bergen Record followed up on this and reported that these men were actually Israelis. On the day of the attack, we all heard on the news that these were Middle Eastern men and the FBI had arrested them. It turned out that they were Israelis. And when they went back to Israel, these five men who worked for a fake moving company in Weehawken, in New Jersey, they went on an Israeli television show and said specifically, one of them said, "We come from a country where terrorism happens every day. We were there to document the event." But that indicates a degree of prior knowledge. And in the case of 9/11, prior knowledge indicates involvement.
Do you think somehow the Israelis, through Mossad, orchestrated this attack?
I believe that there are Israeli elements that are connected to the Mossad that are involved in this attack. Specifically, again, there's the Odigo instant messaging system. Odigo had a New York headquarters two blocks from the World Trade Center, and we know from the Washington Post that employees of Odigo in Israel received instant messages on their computers or on their cellular phones, specifically telling of attacks at the World Trade Center. And as Alex Diamandis, the vice president of Odigo, said, these warnings were precise to the minute. And this is very important because Odigo is a company that is connected to the Israeli military apparatus. It's owned by, at the time it was owned by Comverse, Mr. Kobi Alexander, who is now a fugitive of justice, and he has left the country and is now living in Namibia, Southwest Africa.
Are you, so I want to be clear on this, you're saying that the Israelis or the Jews were warned not to go to work that day?
Not Jews. But we have to understand, not Jews. Odigo instant messaging system works, it has something called a people finder. So you can, for example, send out a message and say, I want this message to go to subscribers who are Israeli or speak Hebrew. And I suspect that this message that went out on the Odigo system went out in the Hebrew language. Unfortunately, the FBI has not told us who sent the message, who received the message, or what the message said. But clearly there was a warning sent out on the Odigo system that day, hours before the attack, warning of the attack. And I contacted the Israeli embassy afterwards, and I think that one Israeli person died at the World Trade Center, and a couple were on planes. Yet the foreign ministry in Israel reported in the Jerusalem Post on the following day that some 4,000, they had received some calls about some 4,000 Israelis who should have been at the World Trade Center that day.
But couldn't you also conclude that initially when it happened, people were speculating that as many as 30,000 people may have died because of the timing of the crash, but that wasn't the case. In fact, some people think that the Americans got lucky that only 2,800 people in the World Trade Center perished that day. So isn't there sort of an equation there?
Yes, but there's a, people were able to flee from the South Tower because the North Tower got hit, although there were some messages going out telling people to go back to work,
right,
go back to their stations. But when we're talking about the Odigo prior warning, we're talking about a specific warning received by specific people who were warned that there would be a terror attack at the World Trade Center at a certain time. And as Alex Diamandis from the company said, it was specific to the minute of the attack. And I think that that degree of prior knowledge deserves investigation.
Did Alex Diamandis ever offer proof of this statement? Did he actually give you documentation or show you the time of it here?
No, the FBI went there to Israel, Tel Aviv, And they interviewed him, and this story was basically pushed under the rug. It was reported in the Washington Post and perhaps in the New York Times, but it was not followed up on. I wrote about it because Bodigo is one of those companies, one of those high-tech computer companies, that clearly people affiliated with that company had prior knowledge. The fact that it's Israeli, it's not my fault.
So if the Israelis knew, who were they working with to pull this off?
I think that one has to look at this historically and realize that the Project of the New American Century wrote a document in September 2000 in which they called for American military intervention in Iraq, whether Saddam Hussein was there or not. And they said that there would have to be a cataclysmic event that would catalyze public opinion and political opinion for U.S. military intervention in the Middle East. And they called for an event, and they referred to it as the new Pearl Harbor. That's what 9/11 was. It was the new Pearl Harbor that allowed this invasion of the Middle East to occur. And if you look back historically, you see that people who have called for the war on terrorism are people from the Likud branch of the Israeli government, specifically people like Benjamin Netanyahu. Benjamin Netanyahu wrote a book in 1986 called Terrorism, How the West Can Win, in which he called for the Western democracies to engage Israel's enemies, Iraq, Syria, Iran, in war. And that's what's coming to fruition today as a result of 9/11.
But do you think he's a historian, very much, I guess, in a way you've become a historian. Do you think he was putting it out there as a tactic or as an inevitability, given world events in that particular region?
I read Benjamin Netanyahu's book, Terrorism, How the West Can Win, in 1986 when it came out, because his discussion of terrorism is always, terrorism happens for no political reason. He ignores the political grievances of the Palestinians, for example. And he lumps anybody who struggles against Israeli involvement in the region as terrorists. So all Palestinians are terrorists by Benjamin Netanyahu's equation. And now the United States is applying the same logic. We're fighting in Iraq. And the Iraqis who are fighting our occupation are classified as terrorists.
You were careful before to differentiate between Israelis and Jews. Mm-hmm. Explain to me why you made that distinction.
It was a very important distinction to make. New York City is I think the largest Jewish city in the United States or in the world, even larger than perhaps the population of Tel Aviv. Whereas Israelis are maybe Jews, but Israelis are citizens of a foreign power. And their country has its own agenda. And that agenda may or may not coincide with American agenda, our agenda. However, American Jews are Americans who happen to be Jewish.
There are some people who, when you go on some of these websites, a lot of other people do not make that distinction. And so what this begins to look like is a Jewish conspiracy. Do you think this is a Jewish conspiracy?
No, not a Jewish conspiracy. But when Israel is involved, people tend to confuse the two. There are many Jews who are not Zionists, and there are many Zionists who are not Jews. So you have to be very careful about who we're talking about here. I think that 9/11 fits the Zionist agenda, which calls for the balkanization of the region and a powerful military in the state of Israel. Not all Jews agree with that.
There are a number of people out there now, obviously, who actually, let me go back for a minute. So when we talk about, because I know it's sort of doing research, that you've made comments about Paul Wolfowitz, about Michael Chertoff, people in the Bush administration who are Jewish, people will look at you and say, this is nothing but base anti-Semitism. Mm. What is your
response? Oh, yes. I've been criticized by Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, Bradley Burston, I think it was, he wrote that I was committing some sort of blood libel against the Jews. That's why I'm very careful. I lived in Israel. I speak Hebrew. I was married to an Israeli. I know the state of Israel pretty well. I've been there many times. You have to differentiate. What are we talking about here? Now, in the case of Mr. Sheratov, Mr. Sheratov is key to 9/11 because he's the person who controlled the criminal division of the Department of Justice at the time. He was the director, the secretary, to whom the director of the FBI reported. So when Mr. Sheratov, or when the Department of Justice released the 200 Israeli suspects and allowed them to go home, although they were suspects of the criminal attack at the World Trade Center, one has to explain what's going on here. And Mr. Sheratov is also an Israeli national. That has to be understood. He is his mother was an Israeli, and she was also an intelligence agent involved in the Israeli Mossad operations that were done in 1948 and 1949. For example, Operation Magic Carpet, in which thousands of Yemenite Jews were brought to the new Israeli state.
With all due respect, because of the State of Israel, where everyone serves in the military, where everyone is involved in the government in some capacity, it's very difficult almost to say that an Israeli is not part of the military machine, simply because that's what the demands of the state require. So whether those five people who were caught in New Jersey were part of the Israeli military or were even Mossad, there's no evidence suggesting that they were actively carrying out some sort of a plot. In fact, if they were, why would they be sitting there documenting it with a camera, dancing, and drawing attention to themselves? It makes no sense.
That's a very good question. That's a very good question. The thing that's important to understand here is that the company for which they worked, these five men who were arrested, was Urban Moving Systems, based in Weehawken, New Jersey. And when I first discovered that these men were Israeli through Paolo Lima of the Bergen Record, I wrote about it, and I wrote that it could be that these men were actually members of Israeli intelligence. I speculated. It later turned out, a few months later, the Forward newspaper, based in New York City, it's a Jewish newspaper, wrote, and they had done research, and they found that indeed, this was a front company. This was a Mossad front company. Their words, not mine. And Dominic Suter, who was the president of this fake moving company, somehow was able to flee the United States in the days after 9/11. The FBI was interested in interviewing him. They interviewed him once, and prior to the second interview, he fled the country. And he's been in Israel ever since. But now, these five young men, when they went on Israeli television, three of them went on TV. The two brothers did not appear on TV. When they went on TV, they looked very nervous. And they said, one of the men said, specifically, we were there to document the event. When they were caught, their vehicle, they had multiple passports, they had box cutters, their van tested positive for explosives, and they had reportedly Arab garb in the trunk of their car, in the back of their car. The local police said the car was tested positive for explosives. But in every case, when these movers, like them, were apprehended, when the FBI got a hold of the evidence, it was suddenly determined that there was no evidence of explosives in the vans.
I want to be clear on this. Do you have police reports documenting what was seized from that vehicle?
Oh, yes. I don't have a police report. Paolo Lima of the Bergen Record, which is the local newspaper, covered the story.
Have you seen a copy of the police report?
It may have been quoted in the Bergen Record, but I haven't seen the copy of the police report.
Because the only reason I ask is one of the flaws in some of the conspiracy theories is that something's taken out of context or it's reported as fact, and then it goes from person to person to person, and then goes back to where it came from in a very different version. It's very circular. The information becomes fact simply because it's reported as such. when nobody may really know. What is your answer to that?
I understand, but in the case of urban moving systems, these five Israelis, what we call the five dancing Israelis, the essential facts of that case are not in dispute. And if these men are honest, were honest and not involved and had no prior knowledge, why did Dominic Souter flee the country? And why has he not come forward back to the United States? Why has he not been brought here to testify what he knew?
Al-Qaeda has claimed direct responsibility for planning and carrying out these attacks. Are you suggesting that Al-Qaeda had nothing to do with it, that this was all part of a large conspiracy, Zionist or otherwise?
Al-Qaeda is, in my opinion, has been exploited. I question whether such a group even exists. I believe that Al-Qaeda makes for a very good fall guy, a lackey, or a person to take the blame, a group to take the blame. But I recall in the first years prior, after 9/11, that the Osama bin Laden tapes at that time never took responsibility for it. It came later, I think it was prior to the election in 2004 or something, that suddenly we got one of these mysterious audio tapes or videotapes in which suddenly there was an acceptance of responsibility. But you have to understand that these videotapes and audio tapes do not make for proper evidence. They're not acceptable in a court of law. And in many cases, I've had these analysis done of these tapes, and it was found that the voice did not match the voice of Osama bin Laden.
So, they were puppets. Al-Qaeda.
Bill Amrine, please dial the operator. Bill Amrine, please dial the operator.
So, Osama bin Laden was a puppet put up afterwards, is what you're saying?
I'm not saying Osama bin Laden himself, but I'm saying the employment of these videotapes and audio tapes of dubious origin were used to sway American public opinion. Yet the CIA certainly has the ability to do voice recognition, to run voice recognition software, to determine to a degree of certainty if that is truly the voice of Osama bin Laden or whoever it claims to be. But this wasn't done. This was done by a laboratory in Switzerland, however. And they found, to a 90% certainty, that it was not the voice of Osama bin Laden.
And this was a legitimate lab?
Yes.
In Switzerland?
It's a voice recognition lab in Switzerland.
What's not to say that the FBI simply was just incompetent when it came to this whole thing?
That's a very good question. I don't think it's incompetence, because the FBI avoided certain things. And yet, on the other hand, the FBI has physical possession of evidence, which could be used to prove the official version. For example, there was parts of a jet engine found on Murray Street, which supposedly came from Building 2, from the plane that went through Building 2, 175. Now, that engine has time-track parts that you could take apart, you can look at the serial number, and you can document that this was put on that plane at that date, at that place. That's never been done. So, if the FBI has this evidence, why don't they present it to the American people to dispel all of the conspiracy theories?
When you imply that somehow Israelis were involved in the attack on the World Trade Center and Pentagon, people are going to look at you. Critics will say, you are an anti-Semite. Are you?
No, I'm not an anti-Semite. This is the main charge that's leveled against me and has been for years, even before 9/11, because I am a critic of Zionist policies. I'm a critic of the wall that's been built across the Holy Land. I'm a critic of what Jimmy Carter calls Israel's apartheid policies. And I'm a critic of Israeli warmongering in the Middle East. But that does not make me an anti-Semite. In fact, I believe that it's in the best interest of the Jews to have a peaceful resolution to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
And in terms of the region and the history of that region, when we talk about why this war and what's going on, many people point to Israel and say it's the one ally in the Middle East. How does that play in to whatever conspiracies may or may not be out there and why this was done?
America's close relationship with the current state, the government of Israel, this Likud or this Kadima government, is very detrimental to our interests. George Bush, President Bush, has ignored the Palestinian conflict since he was elected. And now he has taken us into one war after another war, at great expense to this country. We've lost over 3,000 people. The war is costing us several billion dollars a week. And it's a disaster. We shouldn't be following the policies of Ariel Sharon in the Middle East. It's to our detriment, and it's detrimental to world peace.
All right, and just a couple of things, just to wrap up. But on the website, I'm a Witness, Daryl Bradford Smith ends one of his main pages by saying, prepare for the battle. Prepare for the battle to wipe out the Jews, wipe out the Israelis, wipe out who?
It's not your website.
I don't know about what Daryl Bradford Smith says on his website. It's not my website. My articles are posted on his website primarily because Eric Hushman is the webmaster. And Eric and I know each other, and he puts my articles onto that website. But I can't say anything about what Daryl Bradford Smith says about any sort of war. Or I don't think that there's any I'm a nonviolent person, and I don't see that there's any reason for the truth to be associated with violence.
All right. And just very quickly, are you concerned? Some of these websites are getting a lot more hits. People are looking at them as to what the possible conspiracies are. What you're doing is putting out theories, putting out the truth, putting out your evidence. How do you describe it?
That's a very good question. I don't speculate about 9/11. It's much too important to speculate about. I am actually pretty tired of the subject. I've been writing about it for 5 years, and I only address it now when new evidence comes forth. Recently, an employee of one of the Japanese banks came forward and had a discussion with me and told me that the 81st floor of the world of the South Tower was a full of an acre of power supply batteries that were never plugged in. Well, that's important. And when I got that information, that broke up a logjam that had existed in my thinking about what was in the South Tower, on the 81st floor of the South Tower. Now we still need to know what's on the 82nd floor, what's on the 79th floor, but maybe that'll come forward. But people have to come forward, people who work in those towers, people who work at the Pentagon, they need to come forward and tell us whatever little bit of information they have, because piece by piece we'll put this together. And it's, as I said before, it's an unsolved crime. And when you get pieces of evidence, it's like a jigsaw puzzle. Slowly, slowly, we're getting to see what really happened that day. And I have every reason to believe that eventually the truth will out. And eventually we will know what and who was behind the murder of those 3,000 people in New York that day.
Have you done any research to indicate that there may have been a plausible reason for those batteries to be up on that floor, an acre's worth?
Well, sure. The Fuji Bank was at that time involved with another Japanese bank, and they were worried perhaps about power shortage, so that in order to keep their systems running, their trading and their computers going, they needed to have a backup power system. That's plausible. They reinforced the 81st floor in 1999 and they installed an acre worth of server-sized batteries. But my IT specialist who worked at that on that floor, who went there on a weekly basis, told me the strange thing was that they were not plugged in, because UPS batteries need to be plugged into the main power supply. So if he's telling me that there were these UPS batteries that weren't plugged in, what were they? Were they perhaps thermites?
Okay, hold on a second. I think I'm done with this part of the interview. I think we go to the staffs and downstairs. Do you have any other questions, Sheila?
Just one, and if you could look at Deb when you answer this.
Sure.
Just because when we spoke, and I know in my research that people point, and you as well, a Zionist agenda, and I'm just wondering, you know, is it that Al-Qaeda was conjured up? Was it that, in fact, even Bush may have been like a mole or just a pawn in this whole game of this Zionist agenda, and even now you see Iraq and overtures to Iran? I'm just wondering, do you feel that the Zionists, as you call them, is in control of our government and has really orchestrated these events, including 9/11?
I think that it's clear that there is a great deal of Zionist influence in the United States government today. At the time of the attacks, for example, the comptroller of the Pentagon, Rabbi Dov Zakheim, and Michael Cheretoff was in charge of the criminal investigation. He's now director of Homeland Security. And the United States government, since George Bush came to power, has followed the Zionist agenda to the letter. And if the Israeli game plan for the Middle East calls for the Balkanization of countries in the Middle East, like Iraq, that is to say, to break Iraq into smaller countries, which is what we're seeing today with all the sectarian violence, much of which I think is also false flag terror. And I do believe that the U.S. government has cooperated willingly with the Zionist agenda in the Middle East because of the Zionist influence in the U.S. government and in the Republican Party. And the Zionist influence we're talking about today in the state of Israel, since Ariel Sharon has been prime minister and now with Ehud Olmert, is basically the sons and daughters of the Irgun. They're the sons and the daughters of the most militant wing of the Vision of Zionism. And unfortunately, these people have employed terror in the past since the 1940s. And terrorism is a fact of life in the Middle East, primarily because that's their design.
Do you believe that there's some sort of secret society being led by the Zionists?
There are many secret societies. You know, George Bush belongs to Skull and Bones. There's secret societies everywhere. America seems to love secret societies.
So the Skull and Bones control the government, as you're suggesting.
I wouldn't go that far, but secret societies, by their nature, invite conspiracy. And when you have conspiracy societies, you know, when you have politicians belonging to secret organizations, it invites conspiracy theories.
So, there's also been, a final question on this, there's also been, obviously, the allegation made that the media is also controlled, that somehow, my producer, my camera people are going to be in it, somehow we're all in this together. Do you think, based on our discussion here, that I'm in it, or that if you don't like the story, I'm part of it?
No. I've worked for media organizations before. I used to work for a newspaper. You're doing your job. I did mine. It's the editorial policy for organizations. And today we live in mega journalism. CNN is a mega company, seen around the world. Fox News, BBC. And what we see with the mainstream journalism regarding 9/11 is that they avoided the unanswered questions, and they avoided the problems of 9/11. The things that didn't fit into the official version were ignored. The best example is the BBC. Stephen Evans was in the South Tower on 9/11. He reported a series of explosions, and he speculated the physical and human damage that was caused by those explosions. But in the following days, there was no discussion in the BBC about the explosions at the World Trade Center. And in the case of CNN and Fox and other affiliates and other networks, they had people at the World Trade Center that day who either photographed, videotaped, or saw or heard explosions. Yet all the evidence you know, of explosion at the World Trade Center was basically pushed under the rug. And there it's remained for the last 5 years.
So it's your belief that the eyewitness evidence and everything else simply doesn't bear the conclusion?
The eyewitness evidence, I've spoken to a lot of eyewitnesses, and what they have said supports the theory, if you will, that the towers were brought down using explosives, thermite, and demolition charges. I had a friend who watched the collapse of the World Trade Center. Another friend of mine, William Rodriguez, was in the basement of the North Tower, and he felt an explosion occurring before the first plane hit. He felt an explosion in the lower basement floors of the North Tower. Whatever you think about it, this is evidence that has to be addressed.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
One other thing. I'm sorry.
Can we do it downstairs?
I think that's fine.
We should. All right. So let's do that. Do we need any? I think we've got a variety of shots and everything.
Yeah, we do. Just do a wide. I mean, I'm sorry. Bruce, pull out.
Okay.
No, I mean, I'm sorry. Chris, you are fine. Bruce.
I will use this as well, so just... should I be still holding my pad?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're fine with that.
I don't recall any television interview. The BBC came up to me when I was in London, and they asked me, why are you the only journalist who doesn't believe the official version?
American journalist.
Why are you the only American journalist who doesn't believe it? They asked me that.
But you're not.
I know, but that's why I said, I told them, I said, well, I said, I don't think I am, but if I am, it's because I remember many of the journalists were fired. People who questioned it, the guy out in San Francisco and Seattle, they were fired in the papers for having raised questions. It's just generally the policy not to talk about it.
That's fine. Good.
Anyway.
We just heard Elizabeth. There you go. Okay. That's good.
Why do you think Israelis would have been warned, but Jews would have been warned? Because Jews did die in those towers, and now people are saying, well, there were no Jews who died in the towers.
Well, as I said, the audio system has something called People Finder, and that is a feature of the system. So that, for example, if you're an Israeli and you want to send a message to other Israelis, you can send a message by Hebrew language, for example. You can say, find other Israelis in the audio system who speak Hebrew. This is the message. And I suspect that the message that was received in Israel on Odigo was probably in the Hebrew language. And so, of course, the American Jews who happened, maybe they had an Odigo system, maybe they didn't. Odigo is an Israeli product. It was used by Israelis. The message was probably in Hebrew. So it wasn't sent out to them. It was for other Israelis, perhaps. And my question is, though, is... If Odigo had its U.S. headquarters 2 blocks from the World Trade Center, if this message came out, this warning came out, and was specific to the minute, why didn't somebody at Odigo pick up the phone and call the mayor of New York and the police chief and say there's going to be a terror attack? You know, it's a bomb scare. If you have a bomb scare, you let the authorities know. And had they done that, thousands of lives would have been saved.
Do you need a longer question for me? Or is that good?
I think that's good.
I think good.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we got you.
Cool.
Reaction.
All right, good. All right. Terrific. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, I really appreciate it.